This is Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and your questions, all about NPB. And now your hosts, Johnny Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of May 29th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Saturday night is my buddy Jim Allen. How's it going?
Oh, I'm feeling old, but I'm getting there, which is good. I'm getting older. Which is a good thing, because considering the alternative.
The alternative is not climbing the hill at all, yes.
Exactly.
The old hill, I should say.
Raising one.
Or rolling down the hill, or just being stuck on it or in it. Yeah, I feel you, though. I feel you. Been creaking all day after a long run this morning. So.
Well, that's pretty ambitious. I haven't had any ambition the last couple of days, other than yesterday going out to Cebu, whatever it is, the Dome Stadium, formerly known as Prince.
Right. I'll wrap up some of my ambition and send it to you because I have too much. It keeps getting me injured.
Thank you.
But Appreciate that. You had a good time at that Dome.
I did. In fact, I've got a video coming up. I've got a video of the media entrance to Cebu Dome, which is bizarre. It reminded me of Get Smart.
Oh, all right. Well, we'll look forward to that. But let's get started because we had a lot of stuff going.
So, we do indeed.
Yeah, let's be smart and instead of get him.
Yeah, for once.
For once. Okay. On this week's show, we've got a chat with Foster Griffin of the Giants. We're going to talk about Otaka Yamakawa and his future. We've got our Power Track segment. And the start of Interleague is another thing we're going to chat about before we close things out with some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, well, a week or so ago, I went to Tokyo Dome. I went to Tokyo Dome to check out things there and have fun with the PR guys.
Have fun.
Indeed. Actually, it was nice. I mean, I was expecting more trouble, but the trouble came later. I had a nice chat with a former Giants outfielder who's now a PR guy, which was great because in my experience, one of the best PR guys in Japan, and I've been doing this job for almost 30 years, was Kenji Fujimoto of the Giants, former outfielder. This guy would bend over backwards for anything. I mean, he just went out of his way to be helpful and kind. And I got a number of really good interviews just because of his quick thinking. And, the guys I wanted to talk to would be hurt or sick or whatever, or on the farm team or whatever. And he'd be going like, let's see who we can get for you. Oh, is this Shinosuke Abe okay? And that was in 2003. And after Tetsuya Utsumi's rookie year, he was one of the guys he pulled out of a hat for me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really great. So I am hoping Mr. Inzen will be kind of like that. He was a very cheerful fellow, which was nice. And I remember him as a player, so that was fun. Anyway, so that went on, and I was able to talk to a couple players, and one of them was a new Giants lefty, Foster Griffin. And he was very pleasant and very thoughtful. And I'm just going to let you listen to what he had to say because it's worth your time.
Okay, our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is first-year import Foster Griffin with the Yomiuri Giants. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, it's a real pleasure. You know, we're getting back on the field a little bit after 3 years of Corona.
Right.
And you're getting the full Japanese baseball experience.
I know. I'm pretty fortunate to talk to some other, imports that have played here in the past, and they said the COVID experience was pretty tough here, especially with the passionate Japanese fans being gone as well. So I'm glad I'm getting the full experience.
Yeah, I know a lot of people came and left without that, so you are lucky. Now, I wanted to ask about your career because you started really young. You came out of high school to turn pro, and it's like your timing was really terrible, it seems. Like 2020, you were like just on the edge.
Right.
And then the corona came.
Mm-hmm.
And then were you hurt in 2021?
So I made the team, the big league team, out of the corona camp.
Okay.
And then in my debut, I blew my elbow out.
Oh, great.
So then, yeah, so 2020, I had surgery in August, and then rehabbed 2020, most of 2021. Did some rehab innings in 2021. And then last year, 2022, got back up to the big leagues with Kansas City, and then eventually traded to Toronto and had a quick stint with Toronto before coming here.
Okay, what was the procedure you had done on your own?
Tommy John surgery.
Okay, so yeah. that you were back quickly then.
So I had surgery in August, and then my first rehab game was in July of the next year. So it was like 11 months or so, and then I threw about 40 rehab innings in 2021 before I got shut down.
Fast,
yeah, it was good. It was good, yeah.
Okay. Now, I noticed, I want to talk a little bit about your development as a pitcher, because a lot of guys come to Japan, it's a different context, and you got to kind of take the tools you've got and adapt them to something else. What kind of changes have you made in your...
You know, I've made some, I would say, you know, pitching to poor contact, you know, because I was a reliever last year, so going back to being a starter, and I want to go as deep as I can a game, so I'm trying to pitch to some poor contact and try and let my defense work behind me. And, you know, expanding the zone. So if I'm ahead in a count, these guys are going to swing, but they're going to make contact. So if I expand the zone more, they're probably still going to make contact, but it's going to be weak contact. So that's something I feel like I've been able to adjust to well, especially against left-handers.
Well, the pitching to contact seems to have worked really well because you're basically not walking anybody.
Yeah, I take a lot of pride in that. I don't like to give up free bases. You know, I feel like a lot of the time when you walk somebody, it's going to score, you know, because... You know, sometimes the situation will dictate it to where, okay, maybe we pitch around this guy because he's really hot right now, or you got a runner in scoring position, you want to get to the pitcher, want to get to the eight hole or whatever it may be. But I can't stand walking people.
But on the other hand, expanding the strikes and you're getting more strikeouts, a few more strikeouts than you're getting in the States.
Right, yeah.
It's not easy here.
I think that's just, you know, maybe luck of the draw. It might be just kind of I'm new here. They haven't seen a lot of me.
Okay.
I'm not really sure. Like, I mean, there's only very rare situations where I'm going for a strikeout.
Right.
If there's no out, runner on second or third, I'm probably going to try and strike the guy out. But, you know, that's just kind of happened to be the way it is so far for me this year.
Okay, now, how has post Tommy John affected the way you pitch or your thinking about your pitching?
No, I wouldn't say it has anything to do with my pitching. I'd say it has more so to do with my workout regimen and my arm care routine. Just because I had a workout regimen beforehand, but I didn't really pay a lot of attention to arm care.
Okay.
As far as like pliability and doing stuff like that to take care of my arm more specifically than just like the rest of my body. So doing some specific exercises to strengthen those areas to make sure they're all stable and strong so I can, you know, continue to pitch for a long time.
So the bright side of that is you become more knowledgeable.
Right, yeah. You know, you have a lot of downtime in Tommy John rehab. A lot of downtime. So a lot of research and stuff like that to look through and say, okay, what can I do to prevent any other injury from happening again so I don't have to miss a full year.
Right, and it's never automatic, you know, that you come back from Tommy John.
Right, right. I mean, it's becoming more and more known. I mean, people are having it left and right nowadays, and it's a fairly simple surgery, but there are always, you know, risk when you go under the knife. So it is what it is, but I was lucky to have a pretty good rehab.
Okay, now let's just talk about the Giants here. What's your impression of this team? Obviously, this is such a different dynamic. The clubhouse is different.
Right.
The coaching staff's different. What kind of things have you really enjoyed personally about it, and some things maybe that are a little difficult?
You know, it reminds me, I played winter ball in 2019. It reminds me a lot of winter ball.
Oh.
In a sense of it's small divisions, so there's not a ton of teams. You're playing the same teams a lot, and it's always competitive within each team. So, like, at any given day, you got a chance to win against either the team that's in first place or if you're in last place or whatever. There's just the teams aren't like, for instance, you don't have like the Yankees and, you know, the Athletics, for example. It's like there's probably a big gap between not only payroll but talent on those teams. So here I feel like it's very competitive throughout the entire division, which is fun because, you know, it's like let's plan to win today. And it's very like a let's win today atmosphere. Which is very similar to how winter ball was.
Okay, now when you come here, you step into a whole different coaching dynamic. And has anything the coaches said to you really thought, wow, that was important for me?
Yeah, because they obviously have played here in this league, and they know how. So, like, for me, left-handers in the States, left-handed hitters in the States are usually big power trying to pull.
Oh.
Here, it's not the case, you know, obviously. So, you know, listening to some of the coaches on how to approach those left-handers, because most of them are just going to try and slap me and take me the other way. So in the States, I don't really pitch inside the left-handers very much because of the case that they're trying to pull and hit a homer. So here I had to really adapt to learning how to, you know, command inside and throw different pitches inside left-handers to be able to get them out.
Oh, it's a learning experience.
For sure, for sure.
Now, speaking of learning experiences, you're part of this new generation of players in the last 15 years who've come to Japan in their mid-20s when they have a whole career of baseball ahead of them. When you came here, what was your objective?
Well, you know, I think it just created opportunity for me because I was in a spot in the States where I was most likely going to be used as a reliever or a long relief guy that would go up when someone gets hurt and go back down when somebody comes back. So I would be the rebound guy between AAA and the big leagues, most likely. So when they approached me here with like a chance to start, and I knew a little bit about Japan baseball, and it's like very competitive, very, like I said, a win now atmosphere, and the fans are awesome and everything. I kind of chomped at the bit to come here and get, you know, what I would compare to a big league experience.
Absolutely.
So it's been really, I think I made a really good decision, and, you know, I'm very fortunate for the Giants, you know, scouting me and offering me a contract to come.
Yeah, because now, of course, I deal with this MLB scouts who come here, and used to be, you know, who's the next Japanese guy? Who's the next Japanese guy? Now, that's way down on the roster, on their pecking order. The new routine is, who's the foreign guy? Who's the import who wants to go back to MLB who's not 35 years old?
Right. No, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, also, I think you look at what Shohei's done, and you look at the guy Suzuki's done with the Cubs. There are players here that I think could have a lot of success in the States, sure, along with foreigners as well. But, you know, for me right now, I'm just focused on us, you know, getting to the playoffs and hopefully winning a championship here. It'd be fun.
Okay. Well, it was a pleasure to meet you, and hopefully we'll have you get on the podcast.
Yeah,
it comes
absolutely
out every Monday.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
Likewise.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it.
Okay,
thank you.
Pleasure.
Yes, sir.
Good luck.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, stay healthy.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay. Well, thank you, Foster. It was a real pleasure. And hopefully, and you know, watching you pitch, and saw you pitch today on Saturday.
Yeah.
And pitched pretty well, and tough loss. But anyway, it was great talking to you, John. Comments?
Yeah. So I guess we spoke out about the outside view of Yomiuri in the Central League preview show, and we said, or I said specifically, this is the spaghetti against the wall team. And that didn't give those players a voice. And Foster Griffin comes on and humanizes that scenario for us. And I have to tell you, I the way Yomiuri shut us out and shut us down during this COVID situation has really turned me sour. And Foster Griffin just erased so much of that with the way he was so congenial and gracious. And like you said, thoughtful with his answers. And gosh, you know, he sounds like a great guy. I can't wait to meet him and talk to him and shake his hand as well. So he just kind of turned that around for me. So I think he threw, you know, I always talk about the backdoor sliders guys throw in these interviews, and they sneak some comment in. And I think for me, it was a front door slider that Foster threw this week. And when he said, and I hadn't heard about this, we've done a lot of these interviews, we've talked to some left-handers, some left-handed pitchers, and I just hadn't heard this. When he talked about having to throw inside to left-handed batters and then learn to do it because he had stayed away from throwing inside on left-handers in the States because they'll take you out if you make a mistake, and now he's attacking that area, I found that just something that I couldn't take my eyes off today when he was pitching against the Tigers. And, you know, I did see Koji Chikamoto take a ball. I think Foster was trying to get the ball inside on him, and it ended up over the plate, and Chikamoto didn't miss it and sent it up the middle for a hit. And that, you know, I'm just glued to just watching how he attacks left-handed batters now. And as, I guess as long as they're not power hitters, you don't want to do that to Munetaka Murakami because he's such a great power hitter. But they're going to start facing a lot of good power hitting left-handed batters in the Pacific League during interleague play. So that should be fun to watch. So I just want to watch this whole thing. So I thought that was really great. We've heard about expanding the zone, and I think that's something it's obvious we can see, especially when you get two strikes on a batter. I think the pitchers really dominate here in Japan because they can pinpoint a lot. And it's not, you know, there's still guys like Yohei Oshima of the Dragons who just seems to, you know, get the ball or they'll get the bat on the ball and knock it somewhere where the guys are not playing and slap at the left field or wherever. But a lot of guys just seem at the mercy of a pitcher with two strikes. So expanding the zone is something we've heard. That wasn't anything that new, but it was good to hear again. I think the first person I remember talking about that was Miles Michaelis, how he wanted to try to expand the zone. But he's a right-handed pitcher, and he didn't talk about, you know, which side of the plate he was using to specific batters. But again, these guys don't always give us proprietary trade information, secrets. Trade secrets, whatever you want, however you want to explain it. But I don't think a lot of guys want to get into details about what they're doing. But I think once there's a lot of information out there, once you make 7 or 8 starts, I think people basically in Japan know who you are as a pitcher. So there's really no fear of that. It's just being able to go out there and execute the plan, the game plan, and change things up and make the adjustments at the critical time. So I think expanding the zone is one, you know, thing that we've heard before. The notion of giving up free bases, I think when he said that, you know, I don't want to give up anything. And I think that fits the Giants brand that we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. One, that they throw a lot of strikes. Two, that they get a lot of strikes called early in the count. But I think they try to attack guys. And I think that's very on brand for the Giants, and it makes sense that they go for a pitcher who wants to be around the strike zone, and that made sense to me. And then he called a player a rebound guy. He said he didn't want to be like that. I call them elevator guys because they go up and down between the farm team and the show. It's the same situation, and those are the guys, you know, like, frankly, I've talked about it before because we have the opportunity to watch Major League Baseball in the mornings over here and then watch Japanese baseball at night and get a full 8-hour day of baseball each day if you want it, maybe 10 if you can put that time in. The eyebrows go up for Jim Allen, but it's not like I'm just sitting there glued to the game the whole time. I just put them on, but those are the guys I look for in the big leagues. I look for the guys who are getting a spot start here, or a guy who's come up with the Pittsburgh Pirates and he's 32 and he has toiled in the minors for a while. I said, yeah, that guy needs to come to Japan and play and get some everyday reps and see what he can do and things like that. But besides that, I love him commenting, Foster. I love him commenting on arm care too. As you get older, and as we have talked about for the past 13 or 12 plus years, almost 13 years now on our show, you just kind of accumulate injuries and you learn how to manage and you just go along with them. And I think he's of a certain age, Foster is, that he's starting to understand that aftercare program. And I found the whole thing so very informative and it was just great. And like I said, he's, you know, talking to, I'm going to nickname him Left Shot because that's what we talked about with Lewis Brinson, that he does his home run celebration with his left hand. So I'm going to call him Left Shot Lewis. But talking to him and how nice he was, and then talking or hearing your chat with Foster here, I'm starting to turn that things that had turned sour with the Giants organization for me, but it's starting to turn in a positive direction. So thank you very much for doing the interview, and thank you, Foster. I hope to meet you soon.
I really can't add too much to what you said. Also, of course, with me, the big thing is the left-handed hitters in Japan. And I want to, and also you mentioned Miles Michaelis, because he was the one who talked about that he came to Japan with a plan.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar that, you know, he was not a big strikeout guy in the States. He was a pitch to contact guy. But in Japan, he became a strikeout guy because on the belief that these guys who want to make contact so bad that he could get them out of the zone. You know, he could slowly, you know, get them out of the strike zone to where they thought they were in the zone and they were out. And, you know, they want to swing at that pitch so bad that eventually they'll go for anything.
Oh, you mean the Dion Viciato approach?
I was about to say that. Exactly. Yeah, it's exactly the Dion Viciato school. So,
school?
Hashtag high heat.
That's right. Well, you know, it's like a school of artists, you know, Hudson River School and the Dion Viciato School. So, strikeout artists, I suppose. Anyway, so... I did remember that, and that was running through my mind. And the other player I want to shout out to is Jay Jackson, I should call Toronto Blue Jays Jay Jackson. Now that he's unretired, although currently I believe in
back on three, yeah, Triple A.
I think in Buffalo, yeah. And Jay was the one who gave me one of these, you know, I talked about this past week. I had one of these revelations about life in Japan that I get every, I was going to say every 10 years. It's not quite that. It's slightly less frequent than that. But it sort of like answers these riddles that have been going around in your brain. You suddenly realize how things work in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, Jay Jackson said, when he said to me, I had to learn to stop throwing my two-seamer all the time because the left-handed hitters were just sitting on it and waiting to flick it into left field.
Right.
And because they're not swinging hard, and I was just setting it up for them. And I went like, okay. And then I was doing left and right splits. And I know I was thinking, well, Koshi, I was thinking about Koshien Stadium. I'm sorry for the digression. I was thinking about Koshien Stadium because it's famous for being hard on left-handed power hitters because of the frequent wind blowing in off over the right field wall from Osaka Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked and I went, wow, yeah, the left-handers don't hit for power at Koshien Stadium. And then what I realized is left-handers compared to right-handers, left-handed hitters don't hit for power anywhere. And it's not because all the parks favor right-handed hitters. It's because a huge percentage of left-handed hitters in Japan are basically trained to be slap hitters.
Slap and run. Yep.
Yeah. It's about generally if you're a middle infielder, center fielder, and you're small and fast and you're a left-handed hitter, they want you to be batting in the number one or two spots and basically just trained to take everything to the opposite field and hit everything on the ground. And so there's that whole left-handed profile is so different. And so when he talked about it, I think you hear me laughing on the interview because I was just rolling over. I said, right. Absolutely right. So that was really interesting talking about that. And that also made me think, the last thing I would say is it made me think about the things people do to compete in Japan gives them extra skills that are useful when they go back to the States. And I've heard a number of players tell me about it. And of course, the most famous failure in that regard was Gabe Kapler, who, you know, that was his reason for coming to Japan, but he already had one. You know, he told me when he was managing the San Francisco Giants, he told me, yeah, but I came with like 1 foot already headed back to MLB, so it was never going to work. But he said, I'm here to pick up as many skills as I can, but you got to pick them up, you know, for the purpose of winning games. You know, you just can't be buying them at Rockton. you know, you got to be, you know, internalizing them and doing, you know, taking it and embracing it rather than, you know, I'm here to go shopping.
Right.
So, but as soon as I heard that, I thought, wow, this is something that's gonna, you know, and pitchers learn to be good field hitters here. They learn to usually pick up an extra breaking ball and different ways to command it. They learn all these really valuable skills that they weren't going to learn in the States because, you know, Foster gave that great example. I stayed away from, you know, pitching inside the left-handed hitters, but he's going to pick up a whole nother skill set working in Japan.
Sure. So
anyway, I really enjoyed that. And like you, it made me think about how with left-handed pitchers, and in fact, another guy I spoke to in Miami was Keiji Takahashi, who's a lefty, and he's revamped his entire delivery and his grip because in order to, you know, it's all about left-handed hitters pitching to left-handed pitchers pitching to left-handed hitters in Japan. It's a huge thing. And his altered delivery was not that, but his new grip that gives him that really, really, really good fastball was a part of his learning to pitch inside. And in his case, it was not pitching inside and not hitting guys.
Right, which is a thing. I mean, I understand it, especially lefty-lefty. Let's talk about the Giants very quickly, very briefly. I had just been noticing, in fact, I sent out a tweet with a rolling dumpster that was on fire to represent the late-inning bullpen situation in the Yomiuri land, and that has been a thing, and I believe it cost them a game on Friday night, and it's just a problem, and with all the things, and like I said, yeah, we thank Foster again for coming on and being on the show. And my image of throwing spaghetti onto the wall and see what sticks was really spaghetti. And now I have humanoid figures that I'm thinking of. it's got some meatballs in there and some sauce, but still, he really humanized the thing for us. But that is a problem, that bullpen, and they're going to have to, I'm sure they'll throw money at that soon and try to rectify that. So we'll see how that goes. Shohei Togo is doing his best to cover the gaping hole that Tomoyuki Sugano has left and his absence, and he's doing a good job. He won a game. He threw the first, I believe it was, yeah, it was definitely the first shutout for the Giants this year. And it was really weird. I tweeted, it's really weird to see a pitcher now going out for the ninth inning when it's just a shutout. You know, he didn't have a no-hitter. He didn't have a perfect game going or anything. It's just a shutout. And they sent him out there. So I thought that was kind of weird. And I tweeted about that.
You see that and you think about how it used to be in the 90s, and they're saying, well, he had a 10-run lead and he'd only thrown 140 pitchers. What are you taking him out for? But it didn't matter because they could say he had a 1-run lead. What are you taking him out for? Because they just, everything was an excuse. Okay.
Yeah. And then Yuto Akihiro, the 200-centimeter outfielder, he's really becoming a threat, learning how to manage his body and his height at the plate. I think that was at this level, that was the big issue. He's got a lot of moving parts to manage the legs. I think they calmed his legs down. They quieted the bat down and they've got him swinging a little bit shorter. And so he's making a little bit more frequent contact with the ball and hitting for power. He's looking great, hitting 350 plus. You know, batting in the three hole, he's looking really good. But then they had Kazuma Okamoto in left field. And so they're starting to do some mixing and matching. And I don't know if you got to see this play, but Lewis Brinson ran like a gazelle and jumped in front of Okamoto to pick off a ball that was hit to left center field on Friday night. And I tweeted about it and I sent out I was looking for a gift that said, you know, I'll take that. And have somebody snatch it. But it what ended up happening with Brinson is he takes a Okamoto glove to the face by accident, totally unintentional. But nonetheless, he hit him right in the face. And I said, that's really what you get, because he treated poor Okamoto like the least athletic guy on the field, the guy who, if you're playing in center field, you got to go cover for him. And even if the ball is coming down straight in his glove and the man's waiting and sitting under it in a lawn chair, you still got to go and catch the ball because you're not sure that it'll go in his glove. That's the treatment Lewis gave him. And Okamoto, his glove inadvertently hit Lewis in the face. So, oh, well.
But because it's Okamoto, you'd really have a hard time figuring out whether it bothered him or not.
That's true. It probably didn't, and yet it probably did, but we'll never know.
No.
But I don't think that's a plan, though, to stick him out there in left field. And Sho Nakata really had a good start to the season, and then he had an injury, but he's back now. So they're really kind of looking and searching and trying to piece together things. And what the perfect manager they've got to try these things out and tinker. In Tatsunori Hara.
Not the perfect, so much the perfect manager as the perfect mindset that, you know, that, like he said, everything the Giant, every Giant's problem, well, he varies between I'm the one who hasn't found the right solution yet to something's wrong with these players. He kind of alternates from one to the other. It's either the player's fault or it's my fault because I'm a genius and I should be able to figure these things out. And both are equally annoying.
All right. Well, we again thank Foster for being on the show and look forward to talking to him again. Let's make a four-seam transition and talk about the Yamakawa problem. So continuing the case involving Seibu slugger Hotaka Yamakawa, and that is to say that, we said on, I guess, a couple episodes back that he had a rape allegation, and the team soon after that made up an excuse and then took him off the active roster, sent him to the farm team. Then we heard a report this past week that the police are sending papers to prosecutors, and that's how it works in Japan. The police suggest that this person should be arrested. Now, if it's a serious crime, the police go ahead and arrest the person, and then it's a shoot first and then ask questions later or work out the details later for serious crimes. But in situations such as these, what they do is the police and the detectives, they conduct an investigation, and then they send papers to the prosecutor's office to have them essentially decide for themselves, but they present the facts to them in a way that showed if the case can be seriously prosecuted or not. And so in this case, I did see a report on TV, and a longtime reporter who had been covering courts came on and said 90% of these cases in which someone is arrested first, those people end up going to jail. So that did not happen in the Yamakawa case. But this reporter did state that when papers are sent to the prosecutors, there are four levels of ways that the police suggest the prosecutors should handle the case. One is, this is a harsh crime. This is a serious crime. It requires your serious attention. And then the next level is significant. And that means the police leave it in the hands of the prosecutors to determine how to proceed. And the next level is lenient. Probably there's going to be something, well, there was something that happened and probably the two parties can work something out and a settlement might be in the works. That depends on those two parties. And then the last one is admonishment is suggested. So in this case with Yamakawa, it really wasn't that harsh. They didn't say it was significant, but they did leave it to the police. And basically this reporter believes that there's probably a settlement in the works. Now, if it's a crime, in my eyes, if it's a crime, it's a crime. And the woman, you know, you talked about the fact when on our show that there was blood, that she was bleeding from somewhere. If it's a crime, it's a crime to me. There's no levels of rape, you know, in my eyes. But
Japan.
Yeah, only in Japan. Is that what you said?
No,
only?
I said welcome to Japan.
Welcome to Japan, yeah. So I was talking to someone at the office and he thought, oh, this is going to be the end of Yamakawa's career with the Seibu Lions. And I said, well, settle down there, Bucky. he hasn't been arrested.
Your colleague's name is Bucky?
Well, that's what we're going to call him. We're changing the names to protect the innocent.
Okay, fair enough.
And where was I? Yeah, he hasn't been arrested. And like I said, the papers were sent to the prosecutor's office, left it up to the prosecutors to decide, but were showing more leniency in their wording. So Yamakawa said everything was consensual. So it's a complicated situation, obviously, but I'm not sure that his career with Seibu is over. And even if that's the case, I'm not sure that his career in Japan is over. This reporter, this longtime reporter in the report I saw, suggested maybe he might go overseas and play. That doesn't necessarily mean the U.S. or the major leagues. That just means overseas. So his career probably isn't over in terms of playing. But what's your whole take on this thing, or what did you learn during the week?
Well, I didn't learn anything. I thought it was very informative. I was not aware of the various level. So that doesn't surprise me, because Japan can be very subtle sometimes.
Sure. And I think it's basically evidentiary. If they can, it's basically what they think that they can prove. It's not about what did happen or what didn't happen. It's what they can take to court and prosecute on and facts. I'm sure of that. But other than that,
yeah, but it's different, obviously very different from the United States where, you know, somebody would be charged with sexual, would not be charged with sexual assault and basically not charged at all. Simply because the prosecutors didn't think they could win in court, not because they didn't think it didn't happen.
Sure.
And so basically it's an all or nothing kind of thing. So I get that. And Japan being Japan, okay, that's fine. It's, you know, it's how they want to do it. I get it. As far as his career being over, well, it's possible, but I think it's just as likely that, well, Japan is a country that is, it's historically not big on second chances.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to athletes, second chances are kind of a thing, or if they're good.
Yes.
Now, if he was a former player, oh no, hell no, you know. How popular is he? You know, if he's a really popular player and he gets busted for drugs and he gets an arrested and a suspended sentence like Kazuhiro Kiyohara, he'll be rehabilitated because everybody wants, you know, because he can be a very charming guy, and he has his value and his public following. But if it's somebody like Yutaka Inatsu, who's kind of a grim fellow, and he got busted and basically, Japanese baseball washed their hands of him. So, but with Hotaki Omakawa, he is a very gregarious person. So that's in his favor, and he at least has shown the ability to hit a baseball really far. And my expectation is that some team, and I'm going to guess the Chinichi Dragons, if the Lions cut him, the Chinichi Dragons will give him a tryout at some point down the road when he has shown that he is deserving of a tryout.
Okay.
Of course, if it were DNA, they might just be waiting outside the door for him.
Hashtag high heat.
Hey. I'm joining you.
You weren't arrested.
I can't even say it. I can't say it.
Yeah, but you weren't arrested, so everything's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you won't be alone, bro. That's what they could say. Yeah. That'd be their
day. Yeah, indeed. Well, they're certainly all in on that boat. So
Yeah. Well, look, his career, I suppose Yamakawa's career might be considered to be in limbo, but I think he eventually lands on his feet. And I always want the best for both parties. I want justice first, you know, the victim, hopefully, if this is a victim situation, justice for the victim, and then
sure,
a fair penalty for the offender if proven guilty in court.
Truth is really important.
Yeah.
Although in Japan, as I found out in the media, truth is a kind of a, it's, and I don't want to cast aspersions on the media, but the contract between the media, the social contract, I discovered this was another big event I had, social contract between the media and the people they cover in Japan is very often that the truth is not enough unless a story has huge implications for the public good. So just saying somebody's acting badly, which would be a story in the United States, is not necessarily a story in Japan because the people you write about will complain. It's not part of the social contract between the media and people they cover as it is in the States. So
right.
I learned that the hard way this past week, and that was fun.
We'll get into that one day, but yeah, let's make a two-seam transition and move along for our power track segment, our power rankings. So this should be a fun exercise. Now, the month is not done, so the numbers are not final, but I figured We might as well do the Power Track segment this week and then go with our players of the month to stay ahead of the game, because I like the way things played out last time. We were able to make our announcements and then have a chuckle at the final decision. So starting with Power Track's top three, I think are kind of easy. The Lotte Marines have probably played really well, but they haven't outdone the Hanshin Tigers. I love the Hanshin Tigers lineup. I like what the pitching has done. The defense has really improved. And my boy Seiya Kinami is back. They were quick to jettison him when they saw a sparkle or a twinkle of talent from Takumu Nakano. But Kinami is back at short, playing really well. And I was really mad when they took him off, took him out of the shortstop hole. And I'm glad he's back. And he made a couple of fantastic plays recently. I like to see him there, and Takumu Nakano is doing really well at second base. I like what the defense is doing this year, and we've been talking about that being a problem for the past, I don't know, three seasons in Hanshin land, and now it's the Dragons who can't catch the ball, so I think they're in a good plane here. They're still making a lot of errors. They had 16, the Tigers did this month, but still, the defense is much improved, so I like what they're doing. So I'm going to put them at number one. I've got the Marines just because of the rotation, and the forgotten man Yuji Nishino having a career having a career first half here. It's almost like they don't miss Roki Sasaki that much, and he pitches unfortunately tomorrow, so we won't be able to talk about the Rocking with Roki. We won't have that segment on the show. I guess we can discuss it next week. I'll have to call Lotte and say, hey guys, can you move Sasaki to Saturday for us? Yeah. Just for us.
Just do us all a favor.
Exactly. And then I was kind of lost at the next spot, but I'm going to go with the Buffaloes for my top three. And just because they've gotten hot recently, I think they've won five in a row. What do you have in your top three?
Ditto, exactly, Slim.
Don't look. Don't copy my homework.
I was not. Do I have to share a screen on the Zoom so you can see where I've got it?
No.
I have the Tigers, but it's not even. It's almost like, you know, if we rated them from one at the bottom to 12 at the top, they'd be 13. Mm-hmm. Like Spinal Tap. Since I'm throwing out like 70s pop references today.
I thought that was 80s. The Spinal Tap movie was 80s, but maybe barely.
It had that vibe though.
Sure.
So no, I think the Tigers are just tremendous. And they're tremendous, and they've been catching the breaks, and it's really hard to beat that combination of being good and lucky.
That sounds unbeatable to me.
Yeah, that's the way they look. Lotte's had a lot of that until today. Well, I meant, you know, that game was about an inch away from being a 9-inning win for the Marines. Hiromi Oka catches this ball that's a two-run double, I think it was. So, and it was a two-out. You know, he made a diving catch attempt to catch a ball, and he missed it, and he was close. So, okay, but anyway, good. I like those. I like that same order. I wasn't really perplexed at all. But yeah, Tigers are in a kind of different. They're in kind of the stratosphere right now.
Yeah. All right. What about your bottom three?
Well, going in reverse order, so from the mediocrity to the pits, I've got the Chunichi Dragons checking in at number 10, which is a move up for them.
Yes, a big move, a big jump, and that's what happens when you win a couple games in a row.
Yeah, and I just say again, where would they be without Seiya Hosokawa?
I had to do a "we're not worthy," Wayne's World tweet today, because I'm like,
yeah,
that
today
guy.
We had the second chance guys, and Hosokawa, you know, tore his former team a new one.
Yeah, and, trade, leave me off the roster, will ya?
And I'm just waiting to see what Kotaro Kotaro Osaka Otake can do against the Hawks in our league. So that should be fun.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
Did well against the Giants today.
Brought himself to tears. Yeah, he did indeed. No crying in baseball. Well, but at Koshien, it's sort of, you know, it's a thing at Koshien. So I suppose.
That's true.
At least he didn't go out and scoop up dirt.
Scoop up some dirt and take it home with him. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. So okay.
Number 11, I've got the Swallows. And I've got the Rockton Eagles at number 12. And Deanna Rubin today said, I can't believe what the Eagles did. They had a runner throw down on the base just a second before the guy scored an easy run. I'm going, it's a thing last place teams are doing this year in Japan. It's kind of a fad.
Yeah, the Dragons had their turn already. So yeah, true. I was going to leave the Dragons at 10 as well, but I took them off. I think they won a couple games, and so they moved off from me because if you look at the standings as we're sitting here tonight, they have 17 wins, as horrible as they have been, but so do the Yakult Swallows, have only 17 wins. So I had to take the Dragons off the list because they haven't been, while they've been really bad this month, they haven't been as bad as a couple other teams. And they have been unwatchable. I mean, the pitchers know they can't make the slightest mistake. And then once they do give up a run, it seems like the game is over.
Yeah.
But they somehow have won 9 games this month. And that's because they had a 3-game winning streak, I believe, beat the Carp 2 out of 3. And then they've won these first 2 games against the Bay Stars at home. So
that's a bad sign when you call 3 straight games a winning streak. So
yes, it is. I mean, well, it's better than that 1 year. I think the first year the Rakuten Eagles, every time they won, they were stopping a losing streak. So I mean, every time. But anyway, so I've got the Lions at 10.
Yeah, I see that.
And yeah, they have one good day and then the next day is bad, and they've just been too inconsistent. And I believe since the dark cloud of Yamakawa cast itself over Tokorozawa, the whole city, they've really been bad, to say something complimentary about what they've been doing. Although Shuta Tonosaki is a terrific player and he's one of the best all around players in Japan, and he's doing his best. And Sosuke Genda came back from being injured from his WBC broken finger, fractured finger. He's back, and he made an error right away in his first game on Friday. But that's just rare, and that's just bad luck. But they have been bad. And then the Eagles, my real concern, and we were going to have a conversation probably down the line, we're going to have this conversation about Masahiro Tanaka, who just looks like a guy who is just, I don't know. If I saw a guy pitching like this, and it's not just the results, it's the ball, because I've seen his pitches, like they look like they're not doing anything at all. The fastball is not being fast. The sliders are not sliding. The curveballs are not curving. He just does not look good. And if I saw a guy like this at the end of camp, I don't think he would make the roster. And maybe it's just a bad stretch that he's going through, but I don't know, but he doesn't look good.
Okay, well, yeah, that's pretty much the way I see it. Although, yeah, I can see the Lions going over the Dragons, though. So I like your list better than mine.
Yeah, and then the Swallows, what, they lost their 9th consecutive game today?
Well, they lost they're winless in 10, and they've lost 9 of those.
Yeah, so that also, I mean, Murakami sort of waking up, but things still are not going as planned. But for me, it's just that they just can't seem to do anything right. And they've only won 6 games so far this month, and that's the lowest in Japan. So I took them off. I took the Dragons off that list and slid the Swallows there at the bottom. And it's not going well for them right now. But I guess the least number of wins this month has been the Lions. They only have 5, but yeah, the Swallows have been, they've lost 15, and that's not good.
Well, I think that would pass the common sense test. If losing 15 games in less than a month is not good.
Yeah, Sabre has lost 15, the Swallows have lost 14. So not good, not good. So tough times. And like I said, hopefully all these teams can get it together and something will change. We're going to talk about Interleague right now, and this is a fun time of year for me. So let's make that seamless transition and just continue to talk about how these teams can go up against each other. And last year we saw the Swallows make this big move, and I think that interview hasn't been played yet because I did it on Wednesday. We've talked through the years about how since 2005, when Interleague play started, the Pacific League has just been the big brother, and the Central League has been the little sister, basically. Even the brother.
Yeah, for lack of a word, we can't say on podcast.
I wasn't thinking that, but yeah. But I love Interleague. I love the matchups. I love finally seeing different guys face up on the mound. Because look, we've seen Foster Griffin throw against the Dragons a bunch of times, I think four. And Adam Cootie has faced the Dragons a bunch of times already. And so we're really done with that matchup. And I think we burned it out for the first half of the season.
On somebody else for a change.
And I believe it was like two of the times it was this exact same pitching matchup on the other side too. So it's just been awful. So anyway, two seasons ago, we saw the Central League break a string of 10 consecutive seasons of the Pacific League winning the overall record. And then Yakult won last year as well in terms of the overall team record. So in fact, I think it was the Swallows in 2019 and then the Giants twice in 2012 and 2014. Those are the only Central League teams to win it, so to speak, win that overall Central League session. I'm sorry, Interleague session. And then we've had teams like Yokohama and Hiroshima that have been just awful in Interleague play. So I would like to see either a Yokohama or a Hiroshima step up and win the Interleague play somehow versus the Pacific League. The Carp have a chance, and so do the Tigers. So some other team, too, I'd like to see some new blood in there. What are you looking for?
Well, I think the Lions have never won Interleague.
Okay, but I mean, it's just been
there is one Pacific League team that has not won it yet. So
okay, well,
and last year the Central League did win the most games, but they were, of course, as they are generally always, outscored.
So what? It's about wins. What? It's about wins and losses.
Well, so what? Yes. So what? Well, the answer is so what is. Runs scored and allowed are a better predictor of future performance than wins. So there.
Okay. Well, I'm not trying to predict the future. I'm just saying won. They won more games. Yeah. So I'm talking about I'm here to talk about the past.
Hashtag high heat.
Yep. Well, you go for that. You go for that. Let's see how it works going forward. Okay. Well, says somebody who spends his life thinking about the past, so
and trying to extrapolate that into the future, right?
No, not really. I just like old stories.
Okay,
I'm old. What do you expect? Yeah. All my stories are old.
I gotcha. So I'm thinking the Central League does have a really good chance again this year because the Eagles are struggling. The Fighters could be had. The Lions are kind of spinning their wheels. So there's a path with three of those teams right there.
Rock 10 Eagles. Ugh.
Yeah, the Eagles. Yeah. Yeah. So
if the Swallows were normal, you know, if they were playing to their ability, then absolutely. But also, and that's on the other side is, you know, when you look at, like, I'm thinking of the power rankings, you know, I had the Tigers at, you know, 13, but that's because the Swallows are looking, you know, it's like the ghost of Atsia Furuta is following them around, you know, it's like nothing. Of course, they were a bad team. They were a mediocre team then. And now they've got all this talent, but they're really, really playing poorly.
Are you sure they're not playing to their ability? I mean, you said, are you sure it's not an expectation kind of thing? Because I'm just thinking maybe the other teams did get better and maybe they didn't.
Oh, that's possible.
They didn't get as, you know, as, I mean, That yes, wording, that wording no. is what will okay. spark, get my spidey sense tingling. There.
Okay. Well, no, I look at the players and I see, I've seen guys like Hideki Nagaoka who basically, you know, hit my shoe size and I wear size 13. And then like 013, you know, in April, but he's played well recently and they were missing. Part of it was the odd thing is they were missing so many players and including Murakami's bat in April. And he's come back and he's hit some home runs. And of course, this is a guy who's drawn like 20 walks every 200 at bats, every 20 walks every 100 at bats. So he's batting 230 something and he's got a 350 on base percentage. So there's that. But the real problem has been the starting pitching has been incredibly inconsistent, which it had been pretty consistent for the last 2 years, better in 2021 than in 2022, but the pitching has been poor. So that is really the thing. But Murakami, Yamada's been hurt a lot. Yasutaka Shiomi is back, but he missed all of April.
Right.
I think given the quality on the team, yeah, they're not playing up to it. I mean, I see good things from the pitching, but it's not an overall good look, and I have to wonder how long the confidence can be. You know, one of the hallmarks of that team has been the confidence that no matter how bad it was, you still see them fighting back and playing hard, which mm-hmm. is good. So it means they're never going to be as bad as one of those bad DNA Bay Stars teams of the 10, 15 years ago.
Sure,
but I don't think so. I think if and I don't think when Munetaka Murakami did what he did last year, it's not expectations that he's good, and he's not really good.
Oh yeah, but I mean, he obviously had a career year. It'd be hard for him to match that again. So
I never thought he would match. Though I thought he's a better player, he would be a better player this year, and he hasn't turned out to be yet. Yeah, although he probably will be at the end of the year.
Yeah, he's got plenty of time. So. All right. Well, I like what Hanshin's doing. I like what Chiba is doing. So I'm going to look at those teams. But we often seen some team come out of the middle of the pack in their league to win the interleague session. So I'm hoping that might happen too. And hopefully it's a Central League team because I like the Central League. But I'm the Pacific League has dominated, and I just want to see things even out. So.
It'll be fun because we don't get to see them compete against each other, you know, so it gives you, it's a little bit of a reality check for both sides, you know, see where they are.
Right. All right. One note we didn't touch on last week, or maybe it happened after we recorded, or we weren't able to mention it, but Yoshihisa Hirano of the Oryx Buffaloes became the first pitcher in MPB history to record both 200 saves and have 200 holds. And he also pitched in the U.S. So it's a testament to his longevity and the fact that he has been able to make adjustments over these years. And he's definitely a veteran guy, and they can use him to close. They can use him to set up. They can use him to get out of jams in sixth or seventh innings if they need to. So he has been quite the pitcher. So congratulations to him on doing
Indeed.
That. All right, let's go to fielding questions. So we have a lot of things on the table here, but I did want to mention we did get a note from Michael Westbay, our buddy in Kanagawa, and he sent it via, I guess, what you would call text message, SNS on my phone. And he said, I wasn't nearly as appalled by the fighters' red and black uniforms as you two. And as far as the collar was concerned, I liked the Hawaiian print uniforms the Bay Stars had with the collars last year. I don't understand fashion, but I know that some people care a great deal about it, Shinjo among them, and that personal taste plays a large role. I didn't see it as a big deal, and if the fighters are winning in it, keep on wearing it. So that was his take. And I say, Michael, one of the reasons I pay so much attention to fashion is because I don't know if Jim knows this. I used to be a model. I did modeling back in the day on ramp. I did photo shoots, and I learned about color coordination and matching patterns and how to walk and how to pose and all that stuff. So I come by it honestly. I do know about fashion, and it's important to me, and I'm not just ranting. I really have experience and knowledge, and it's very annoying to see things out of place, is how I'll phrase it. But
that's a good thing. I think that really is a good way to describe yourself.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, though, Michael, for
sounds
that.
Sounds much better than being picky. I'm picky. you have difficulty with things that are out of place. I'm just picky.
Okay. Our next one comes from Glenn. I'm picky too, though. But Glenn,
that's
in Tokyo,
a different thing.
It's a different thing. Well, yeah. Okay. Thank you. Our buddy Glenn in Tokyo, he sent us an email, and he said, "Time to look at the standings, right? Can we? Can we?" In the voice of a 5-year-old. And then he sent an image of someone.
I think it's a vampire.
And he wrote, "Cut to image of John avoiding the bright lights of the standings. Is it still too early?" While Jim has already calculated the Pythagorean winning percentages. So he
and
says,
I shared this with a colleague in my day job who knows both of us, and he was laughing pretty hard.
All right, Chubbs. Or was it Chubbs?
It was.
Okay. So is it still too early? Actually, I'm looking at the standings, but again, Glenn, my biggest thing is I like to look for or at the number of losses. That really is what I key on, because you can't do anything about the number of losses. While you can go out there and of course, every day you're going to win and lose, but you need to stack up the wins over the losses. And if, like I was talking about with the power tracks, you know, Sabu has that 15 loss count so far this month, and that's really, really hard to overcome, because you've got to beat those teams now that you're chasing, instead of hoping that somebody else beats them. You got to beat them. But anyway, yes, I'm looking at the standings, but does anybody believe that the Yakult Swallows is going to finish in fifth place in the Central League? Because that's where they are at the moment, right? Just above the Dragons. And the Dragons have been really, really, like I said, unwatchable. I mean, sometimes I'm thinking, are these guys really getting paid for this? Because I could do that. Somebody send me give me a 10-day contract. I could do that. But the standings, they don't really tell you that much. I try to look at how the teams are playing and what the win-loss record is and why. And so I don't think, take the Giants, for instance, I don't think we know what the Giants are and what they're going to be for the majority of the season, because I think there's still changes to come.
I guarantee Tatsunori Hara does, or he thinks he does.
Yeah, what we know is that they need pitching, and so they're going to go out and get it somehow. And
they did. They got Kohei Suzuki.
There you go.
Answer solved, problem solved.
Problem solved.
Suzuki.
All right. So yeah, I'm looking at the standings now. We can look, Glenn. So yes,
The answer is yes. You can exhale, everybody.
Okay. Yeah. The answer is essentially, are we there yet? Yes, we're in the neighborhood. Glenn sent a bunch of questions. I don't know that we're going to have time to deal with all of them or handle all of them. So we'll do the main one, which was, Jim, which teams have surprised you so far, good or bad?
Well, the Swallows obviously is the big surprise for me, which is not happy, because I've switched from being a Swallows fan to being a fan of NPB in general, and I want to see good pitches, and I like to see good plays regardless of who makes them. Even if they make them against the Swallows, it doesn't bother me, because good is good.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the quality of the results has been disappointing. Some of the pitching has been disappointing. As far as who surprised me, I guess a couple of things. I guess the Hanshin Tigers pitching has surprised me, because they basically they've got 3 or 4 guys on the pitching staff I did not expect. And I'll be honest. I look at minor league hitters. I don't really look too much at minor league pitchers. So I missed Shoki Murakami.
I think, yeah. yeah.
But I looked at hitters, and so I wasn't, I'm not surprised by Sei Hosokawa, but Shoki Murakami took me by surprise. Okay.
Hmm. I guess the biggest surprise for me right now is the Marines, because I didn't, I would fully have expected Noki Sasaki to have thrown a no-hitter already by now and be leading the league in every statistical category like he was the first 3 weeks, but we haven't seen it.
He's still leading in strikeouts,
Still leading in strikeouts, okay. But I thought they were going to have some holes in that rotation. And like I said earlier about Nishino, here's a guy who had, I believe he had Tommy John. He did have some surgery. He has had injury problems. He has had inconsistency issues. He has had whatever you can, I mean, he just has been mediocre. It hasn't been a shutdown guy. And all of a sudden, he's not that guy anymore. He's someone else. And he's the second coming of Sasaki. And it's really a big surprise to me that a guy like that, I mean, today, I mean, this is how baseball can surprise you, right? We had a matchup of Bauer versus Matsuba in Nagoya. And I my full expectation was, well, I'm not even going to bother to spend any minutes on this game because there's no way the Dragons are going to, they can't get, you know, hits off of the average pitchers in Japan. How are they going to get it? Hit or generate some offense off a Cy Young winner, and somehow they end up winning this game. So that's how baseball can really surprise you. And I think a guy like Nishino, his story is surprising. So that's the biggest one for me in terms of an individual. And then, like I said, the team, the Marines, I didn't think that they'd get off to this great a start. And Hanshin, also your Hanshin Tigers, Glenn, have done a great job. And like I said, it's not necessarily one guy, it's not necessarily one pitcher, one hitter. It's that they're getting contributions up and down the lineup, and they're playing good defense. Sheldon Noisy, you know, again, they've had some issues with foreign players. They'll get one, the guy has a good month or something, and then we don't see him, or he gets hurt or something happens. And Sheldon has been, he hasn't been great, and he hasn't had to. He has been consistent in driving in runs, making a few plays in the outfield here and there, and driving in some key runs in key situations. And that's really all you can ask for, because there's not going to be anybody who's really going to come and hit a bunch of home runs all the time. So, and he doesn't look like a first year guy. He seems to be making adjustments and getting used to hitting weird pitches in fastball counts and all these things. So he has been really good. So I would say Hanshin and the Marines. And then Yuji Nishino, the guy, came out of nowhere.
Coming out of nowhere is kind of the I think pitchers coming out of nowhere is kind of the thing this year, except for, except for the Fighters, the Eagles, the Giants, although the Giants to some degree, and the Swallows. Well, pretty much all these, the Dragons, I'm going to throw them in there as well. But the Carp have had guys, you know, come out of nowhere, the Tigers and the Buffaloes, the Carp have had these guys come and look really, really good. So actually it's a smaller list than I'm thinking, but the Marines, yes, but the Marines, and certainly the Marines, the Tigers, the Carp, the Buffaloes have been certainly in that area.
And I'll tell you one other team that it probably wasn't a surprise, because I believe we basically all had them down in the standings in the prediction show, and that's the Eagles. And we were just really concerned about their offense, and I guess we need to be concerned about a lot more than the offense, because they've been as bad in as many areas as you can find, including managing. They just really have not done a good job at pretty much anything. And they were the beneficiaries of the weirdest situation. You had a first year left fielder or a player in playing left field. You had a part-time shortstop come together and not be able to field a ball, a pop-up on Friday. And then the next guy comes up and hits a two-run home run to put the Eagles in the lead. And the Fighters end up losing this game. And even though they won that game, their record is still bad because the Eagles can't consistently generate that kind of power and don't get those kind of hits. And sometimes when they do, even their guy at the back of the bullpen seems to have a bad day. So they've lost so many games in you know, I sent an email or message to Jason Koskrie one day saying the Dragons are inventing new ways to lose games. And that was the aforementioned not hustling home all the way and have a runner thrown out at third base for the final out of the inning. And you couldn't possibly see the play going on behind you, but you're easing up and going across home plate and the runner's getting thrown out at third before you can cross home plate, and it costs you a run in a game you were losing by two runs, so you could have been one run closer at least, blah, blah, blah. And I think, what did you say? The Eagles did that today?
The Eagles did it today.
Yeah. So they're, I mean, these teams, I didn't expect the Eagles to be this bad, and I think they'll right, I don't know if it's ship, right? The ship is the right phrasing with the Eagles and that manager, but they'll get on the right path. They'll find the right course. They'll get the right coordinates. What do we say?
Maybe they can get Hideaki Wakui back.
He probably wants to go back with, after struggles with the Dragons. And he actually didn't pitch poorly. He hasn't pitched poorly for most of his starts, but they just don't get him any runs. And so the other day when he kind of blew up a game, it was like, well, what do you expect? You know, one day I'm going to have a game like you guys.
Wow.
So
we got plenty of venting tonight about the Dragons.
Yeah. All right, Glenn, I'll tell you what we'll do, Glenn. We will continue your question next week because there's there's a follow-up from last week, and we had Dave ask the question about I guess the question was all over the place. It was about Lars Nootbaar, but it was also about Gosuke Kato, who's with the Fighters, and his situation and him playing on with the Japanese passport and going through the draft again. So Dave did follow up, and Jim, why don't you just take this from here, because it's
yeah, he meant it. Well, see, I said essentially that the there's a roster quota in Japan, and right now you can have four active players who are limited. And the number of restricted players is basically whether you're draft eligible or not. And currently, actually, it says you have to enter NPB through the draft in order to avoid that roster limit, or you have to be you can be a non-drafted player who's played in Japan 9 years, which is the same length for free agency, and then you are no longer counted against the quota. But the comment was, well, what about guys like Koji Akiyama, who was an undrafted free agent? And he's correct. In the past, now there are no longer undrafted free agents. Now with the developmental draft, basically the only two ways to get into an NPB team if you're a Japanese citizen is through the draft or the developmental draft. There's no, you know, if you're not drafted, you're good to go. Guys like which when the developmental system started before there was a draft, guys like Tetsuya Yamaguchi, who won Rookie of the Year, was one of those guys. He was basically signed after a tryout after the draft when nobody wanted him. But there had in the past always been those guys, and some of those guys turned out to be big stars. Although I think Koji Akiyama was a case of the infamous Rikuo Nemoto's, one of his scams.
Okay, we'll get to that one day.
Yeah, that's another story. You'll have to read my newsletter about Rikuo Nemoto, master spy.
Okay, so basically I think what I learned when I read the story about Michael Nakamura, it just said if you're a Japanese passport holding citizen, that you the only way, as Jim stated before, to enter NPB is through the draft. And so I don't know about what was it? What do we call him? Daikon Yo? What do we call him?
Oh yeah, Young Daikon. Well, no, Daikon, because yeah. Okay. Now the question was, what about non-import players? Okay, basically, you're eligible for the draft if you're a Japanese citizen, regardless mm-hmm. of where you were born,
right?
Or you've played amateur ball with a recognized amateur federation for, I think, 3 years. Although I think it's 2 years after high school. I think it's 3 years before high school. So a lot of players like Young Daikon, formerly of the Nippon Ham Fighters and the Giants, and Yasuaki Taiho, whose Chinese name I don't remember, but he was from Taiwan, but he played, he went to a junior college in Japan, and mm-hmm. he was eligible for the draft. There's also a Brazilian guy who plays who was with the Eagles for some time, whose name escapes me. But he was also draft eligible, entered through the draft, and was not counted against the non-draftee quota.
Okay. So there you have it. So I hope that clears things up. And probably, you know, if you have some more questions you want to follow up with Dave, go right ahead. We'll feel free to do that and we'll address that. And like I said, Glenn, we will finish up with your questions next week. Anyone else who has a question or comment, hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Send questions via email to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com. Hit us up on the Facebook page as well. Wow, we've got interviews stacking up here, and Jim and I have been able to go out to the ballparks and talk to people and shake hands with guys. So hopefully you guys are enjoying it and that you continue enjoying it. And we have our interview all ready for next week. And in fact, Jim's got one too, so we might do a double. Maybe we'll double them up next. Why not? They're not that long. All right. Yeah, we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
And really see you at the ballpark. For real. I'm serious.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. Submit your questions with hashtag High Heat and listen for an answer in an upcoming episode.